a king bee, baby. Want you to be my queen. Together we can make honey.
On Hungry for Sport, John Ralph.
Get on to Johnny Ralph.
That's what we always do. Jeffrey, g'day, Buzz.
How are you, Kevin? Now, in the interest of accuracy, I think it was a six iron that Elin used just to knock Tiger out. I cannot wait. I can't wait for Friday morning. I'm counting down the sleeps. And I'm not even in Tiger's camp. I think he sooks and he mopes and he throws clubs and he's got horrible on-court demeanour. But he's like a car crash. I just cannot look away from him. He is so compulsive. It's just everything he does, you want to watch. With him, there's no middle ground. He'll shoot 80-85 and he'll miss the cut horribly and he'll duff chips and he'll do terrible things or he'll finish top 10. And I'll be watching every second of it, Kevin. I just cannot wait for this tournament. You're right. Whatever he does, people just want to be a part of it. And I think what we saw in that news conference, he was laughing. He was talking about his kids. This might just humanise him. This might be, you know what, the making of Tiger Woods. People like myself that have been frustrated when he hits a 6-iron to 4 foot and goes, oh God, I left it above the pin. We might see Tiger laughing and joking and maybe struggling because the journey is in the struggle. I can't wait for it. It's going to be fantastic.
Well, I just want to ask our sports fans, is he still the most watched sports person for you that you love to watch the most? I think he's up there with Ali. If he's performing, I think you've just got to watch Tiger Woods. And now the story, of course, is it's another chapter in his life at the moment with the fact that, you know, he can't play the game that he's once dominated. You know, he's won 79 US PGA tournaments, 79. Only Sam Snead has won more, 82, and he's won 14 majors. And he absolutely dominated the game of golf. And he's back. A lot of people didn't think he would come back and play at the Masters because of, you know, he's got the yips with his chipping. I was even watching the ladies' game the other day, and the Judy Rankin, who does special comments for the ladies, was saying, and they got onto to the Masters, and she said, well, he's got an infliction. When he chips, he can't chip anymore. Yep. So I don't think he can play. But he surprised everyone by putting his hand up. Well, and now maybe trying to take the pressure off himself. He's joking around. He's going to play the par 3 tournament. He's going to have Lindsay Vonn, his wife or partner, not his wife, his partner's going to join him. His couple of kids and Sam and Charlie are going to join him there for the par 3. So he's trying to lighten up a little bit.
He's the kind of player that is so fascinating that he makes you have arguments with yourself. I was thinking to myself, he can't play well here. No player would come back from an 8-week layoff and play at Augusta and still think that they could chip well and putt well with all the nerves and all of the little, you know, ticks in your game that brings out. But then I thought to myself, well, if he is playing, he must be so confident. He must have done so much work. And so you have these little internal battles with yourself because that's what Tiger does to you. Now, as I say, he could shoot 80, he could shoot 72 and lead the tournament after the first couple of rounds. What I love about Augusta too is it's a field of dreams. You see Jeff Ogilvie in the papers today. Jim Tucker spoke about to him. And look, he's had a pretty good Masters record, but his last couple of years of golf have been pretty ordinary. He shot 80-82 2 weeks ago. And yet he's saying to himself, you know what? If I could just roll a few putts in, if I could just get hot again like I did during 2011. You know, Jason Day talking about parking his big SUV out the back. The best real estate in Augusta. He's there with his wife and kids and he just walks out past the caddy's shop and he doesn't have to go and be an hour away and drive in through the traffic. You know, everyone wants to be a part of it. Everyone wants to be there. Everyone dreams about this tournament where dreams are made and dreams are broken.
Well, Adam Scott has also said that, you know, he's playing with a long putter and he's the only Australian ever to win the Masters. So he's having a crack. So we've got a couple of really good chances. Adam Scott plays at his best. Jason Day, we know, is capable. Ogilvie, you mentioned Ogilvie, he's never missed a cut every time he's played at Augusta. So if he plays there, he doesn't miss the cut. So if you don't miss the cut, you've always got some sort of a chance. And, of course, it's all going to come down to see whether Rory and a couple of other players who are just about the hottest players on the planet at the moment in Jordan Spieth and also Jimmy Walker. And then you've got perennials who always play well at Augusta, like Bubba Watson. Phil Mickelson always plays well. And you know what? I bet you at some stage during the Masters, Freddie Couples.
Yes, Freddie.
Freddie Couples at some stage will lead the Masters field, whether it's after two holes or four or six at the end of the first round. Freddie Couples will lead the Masters.
He'd be wearing those hush puppies. He'd be coming up 18. The crowd will be cheering him. He'd be just that long, slow, languid swing. He'd just be throwing those 9-irons in. Kevin, you talk about Australian equivalents. The only person and sportsman I can think of that is so captivating is Buddy Franklin. Buddy Franklin can kick goals. He can miss goals. He can be reported for his clumsy actions. Whatever Buddy Franklin does, it is captivating. Mm. John Daly, I mean, he was never as successful as Tiger Woods, but everything he does, it can be plunging four balls in a row into the water at the lakes. It can be, you know, knocking three woods 280 metres. Whatever John Daly does, you want to be there. And so, look, that's the power of sportsmen. That's why, you know, Rory McIlroy, best in the world, but he's doing ads about Tiger Woods, if you've seen that Nike ad. You know, these guys, they've made the big bucks because everything they do is just fascinating to watch.
Well, who do you like to watch? I want to ask the fans that because you just made a good point because, you know, John Daly hasn't won a tournament, I don't reckon, for about since Federation, and he wears all those, you know, coloured clothes and all that sort of stuff. But if I ever turn on a golf tournament and all of a sudden, you know, you see John Daly comes on the screen, I watch him. Yep. I want to know what scores he's shooting. You know, is there any chance that, you know, the magic can return?
Is he still with his girl because he breaks up with a partner every 3 weeks and he's back on the Diet Cokes and then all of a sudden he's eating 12 Dunkin' Donuts?
He's having his stomach
stapled. Yes, all those.
Loses 15 stone then puts on 15 stone.
Okay, can I give you one then?
Yes.
I had a topic down there, eye catchers, that maybe didn't get the highlights on the weekend, and one of them is my new cult hero. Now, you know Levi Caspar was my cult
hero.
But when he's not playing in the AFL, it's very hard to be an eye catcher. The great McCarthy. Cam McCarthy. I've only seen him play a couple of games, but he's a big, strong, ponytailed GWS tall forward. And everything he did was captivating on the weekend. He was taking game-saving marks in defence. And then he rolled forward and kicked big goals. Look, he wasn't the best player in the field by any stretch. But everything he did, you just had to think to yourself, mate, this bloke's got something. Now, he's big and wild and woolly. He's a beautiful kick for goal. He's going to be a beautiful foil as well for Jeremy Cameron, who had, what, five good opportunities and kicked six goals. They're going to win some games this year, GWS, and Jeremy Cameron's going to be at the front of it, but so is the great McCarthy.
The great McCarthy.
At the moment, he's the very good McCarthy, but I think he could be the great McCarthy in a matter of weeks.
There's a very good chance that he may not have even played the opening game of the season if Patton had been okay, and if Tom Boyd, you know, had been still there, because at the end of last season, they expected him to be there. The great McCarthy may not be so great because I don't know whether he would have got a game.
He might be the great McCarthy in AFL. You know, Patton, look, we like the cut of his jib. He hasn't been a great goal kicker yet. Tom Boyd, what did he play? 9 games for 8 goals. And yet McCarthy came in and kicked, goals. I think it might have been three. I think it might have been 3 goals. We know that Jeremy Cameron's going to do his stuff. And this is a GWS side that's going to surprise a lot of people. Pat Full took a couple of big marks at the end, but he wasn't fantastic before that. Callum Ward was pretty good. Ryan Griffin was terrible. And yet this side, the young midfielders just stood up. It's going to be a couple of ripping games this weekend. When you look at those sides that can go 0-2, all of a sudden they're in a good position. They take on Melbourne in Canberra. But you look at those sides. Essendon could easily be 0-2 if they lose to Hawthorn. You look at the Cats. They could easily be 0-2, could lose to Fremantle at Simmons Stadium, which they have done in finals previously. The Blues on Friday night take on West Coast. Imagine if they go 0-2. 300 career losses for Mick Malthouse. He's only 3 weeks away from...
But he's had a lot of wins.
He's had a lot of wins. He's had, 512 of them, if you want to get it right. And you look at North Melbourne as well. I mean, if the Lions could all of a sudden pull off their miracle at Etihad Stadium, they're a 0-2. So we haven't overreacted to round one losses, but there's going to be some sides that are going to be plunged into some turmoil pretty quickly.
As we go to the break also, you mentioned eye catchers. Who actually caught your eye on the weekend in the first round of footy, who never probably got a lot of credit, never got a lot of publicity, but you came away from the game thinking, you know what, I thought he was absolutely fantastic. Now, obviously, the great McCarthy falls into that category.
The very good McCarthy.
For you, the very good McCarthy. But who are the eye catchers for you on the weekend that maybe didn't quite get the kudos? We'll take a break. 9429 1116 0433 98 1116 if you want to send through an SMS. If you want to tweet at Kevin Bartlett 29 or Hungry for Sport. 9429 1116 is our famous talkback number. And also we've got the fantastic footy cards to give away to our best caller, plus the legs of ham, of course, from Woolies and Coles, and also off the play golf at Keysborough to our best caller, along with the buzz. And Dom has joined us from Reservoir. G'day, Dom.
Good morning, gents. As a North supporter, I don't want to talk about round one, thanks. regarding the great McCarthy, the last great McCarthy I recall as a young teenager at the time, pretty excited about John McCarthy in the late 80s. He was taking speckies every week for North, and they prematurely dubbed him the great McCarthy, and then he flopped for the next 3 years, did absolutely nothing, was so inconsistent, and Greg Miller traded him to Fitzroy, and we got John Blakey out of it. So that was a win-win in the end for North.
Well, John Blakey only played about 700 games for you in Brisbane.
No, he was fantastic for us. I think he played until 2002. At the age of 37, he retired and two premiership medallions. But also, KB, you asked late last week about who was the last mature-aged round one draft pick not to debut in round one.
Yes.
I seem to recall 1992 draft, Robert Pyman was as highly rated as Nathan Buckley in the sample. He's about a 21-year-old at that stage. You might be able to look back on the records, John.
Yeah, I think he won the McGarry medal too, did he?
That's right. Yeah, I think he did, if not second, behind Buckley or vice versa. But then he didn't debut until round five or six the same night Adrian McAdam made his debut against Richmond and kicked seven.
Well, we're going back a few years. That was on the back of Blaine Bokhurst not making his debut for the Blues. They took him with their very first draft pick, and you would think, as a mature recruit, that was the topic, that he never got a game.
Well,
if
Blaine Bokhurst does not play against West Coast, he'll never play. Now, I know he's not an exact replica of Christian Jacks, but they need running power there. It was brought up that Caspot might come into that side, but as Mick Malthouse said on Friday night, Caspot hasn't kicked any goals in his NAB Challenge games. I can't see Cat, don't you? Nod your head, Kevin.
Good ball!
Don't you, sniper. So I would think that if Blaine Bokhurst doesn't play in round two, they might just trade him out by round three.
Well, we'll ask the fans also from your side last week, would you make any changes to your side and who would you bring in? Now, of course, they want to bring Casbolt in. Johnny does, very famous. He's head of his fan club. Who should come into your side this week?
Well, Jeff, what about Chris Dawes? What happens with Chris Dawes?
Oh, Chris Dawes has got to come straight back into Melbourne's side.
I would have thought so. He's had a super preseason. He's suspended for round one. Jesse Hogan, for him to take those big marks as he did in the last couple of games, the defence needs to be broken down, and that's by repeated leads from an experienced player like Chris Dawes. Oh, he's a certainty to play.
Jeff is in Pakenham. G'day, Jeff.
Hey, Kevin. How are you?
Good, Jeff. Someone a bit eye-catching in round one for you?
Yeah, I actually think everyone talks about how Brisbane got Dane Beams, but Jack Chris, number 25, that we got, I know we're going to have a long year, but I think he was going to be an absolute super talent in a year or two. I really do.
And we've smashed him all pre-season. We talked about his lack of penetration in his kicking. I see on Fox Sports News, Kyle Chaney doing a press conference. We smashed Adelaide's defence and lack of power in their tall defenders. And then Kyle Chaney came in and Hardingham came in. Both of those players, really exciting against North Melbourne. So just kudos to those three players who've had to cop some slings and arrows and just come out and performed in round one.
Well, Collingwood's got a few injuries, as we know, and Steel Sidebottom is going to be out for maybe somewhere between 6 to 8 weeks. Levi Greenwood, as we know, is out for a long, long time as well. Nathan Buckley had this to say about Ben Reid.
Reid will play this week, continue his, I suppose, increasing his game load. You know, we think we're managing him really well. I mean, externally, clearly, you know, there's an impatience to see him up and about, but we've said all along that, you know, Reid will play when he's ready, and he's still got some more game load to get in and to get some and to find form with that time as well.
You still don't rate the Pies, Kevin. You still think they will slump and fall into a hole, don't you?
I don't think they'll make the eight. No, I don't think they'll make the eight.
No, I don't think they'll make the
eight.
In fact,
either. I said a couple of years ago when Nathan Buckley took over that to me it was a rebuilding period for the Collingwood Football Club, and they're looking 2 or 3 years down the track.
Say what you want about where they will finish. That was a huge win for them. Yes, Brisbane kicked the last seven goals. Who cares? After all that had happened that week, after all that has happened in regards to players like Levi
Greenwood
missing out, they go up to a foreign place like Brisbane. They're 50 points up. It's a huge win. Who cares about the last seven goals?
Some of the standouts, I've just asked who was one of the eye catchers that maybe hasn't got any kudos coming out of round one and maybe some changes for round two. Brody Grundy is getting a lot of nominations saying that he's going to be a champion. Was best on ground in the game against Brisbane. And he's been given little credit by the media. I noticed in the Herald Sun that Dane Swan got the best player on the ground.
Did he really?
Yeah, that the whoever was given the votes for the Herald Sun gave Dane Swan.
I thought that he was fantastic, Brody Grundy. Martin and Leuenberg, we've talked so much about them over the off-season. He was dropped repeatedly for Wits last year. He's come out and I think he's dropped something like 40 seconds off his 2 kilometre time trial. And all of a sudden, again, Collingwood fans are excited by their ruckman.
Others are saying that Jeremy McGovern is now an absolute gun. He's only played a handful of games, hasn't he, McGovern, really? If he's not the best grab in the game, then I don't know who is, said Jukes. He is a very good player, Jeremy McGovern, but gee, I'll tell you what, Carlton's got a chance against West Coast. They've got so many injuries at West Coast. And if they can, if some of their forwards can, you know, if Henderson can play well, or if Casbolt comes in and plays well, or, you know, they can get someone to stand up on their forward line, kick some goals, like Liam Jones. Because the defence of the West Coast Eagles at the moment has been obliterated.
And McGovern was just like a stonewall, wasn't he? He just sat there, played on Boyd, came from forward, came from back. Beautiful intercept marks, a dozen of them. But you can probably split him up. I'm sure that Carlton would play him on some, or allow someone like Liam Jones to play on him, hopefully lead him away from the action, and then Henderson gets into the play. But he was mighty, wasn't he?
Had also on yesterday, Kevin Sheehan talking about whether or not we should lift the age group of drafted players. Paul Roos is one that's come out very, very strongly. Would like to see the age limit lifted. The Australian Catholic University at the moment is running a research program for 12 months to go through and have a look at, you know, those who are drafted at a young age as compared to maybe coming in as a mature recruit or coming in at 19 or 20 or 21. So I'd like to ask the fans, what's your thoughts there as far as drafting age of players? Do you think it should be higher than 18 years of age? This year, Petrarca and also Angus Brayshaw went, what, 2 and 3 in the draft. Now, they also weren't at school. They were doing university. So they finished their schooling and started their education before coming into the system. So that's another reason why some people think that maybe the age group should be lifted. This is what Kevin Sheehan had to say in discussing it yesterday.
Even people that work in list management and recruiting are split in their views as to whether, in fact, you should raise the draft age and have players come through physically and mentally better prepared for a full-time AFL career. Some would say leave it as it is. Others would say actually make it 17 years of age for those that are ready.
So that was Kevin Sheehan speaking on this program yesterday. Then Mark Evans, of course, of the AFL, said this on the run home.
Just reviewing just the talent program means that if a kid is now 18 or 18 and a half, was he going to get better development on an AFL list or having another year outside of the AFL list? And the answer was, under the current model, better off getting into an AFL list. But the way we've taken AFL development, have so many development coaches and so many resources and different systems that there really has been a gap in our underage talent program compared to what they get on an AFL list.
What's your thoughts here, Ralphie, about lifting the drafting age?
Oh, I think it's right as it is. None of these blokes are going through year 12 as they're playing, making their AFL debuts. And the reason I think that the AFL would never change the draft age is the battle for the hearts and minds of these young professional talents. You look at Alex Keith. Well, he chose cricket. Look at Pat McKenna, the under-19 Australian cricket captain. Well, he chose GWS, or in fact was drafted by GWS. So I think if even 4 or 6 or 8 or 10 players a year said to themselves, you know what, I don't want to have to wait until 20 to make my debut. I'm going to go and play basketball or cricket or whatever the sport might be, then the AFL would be scared off. No, I think the draft age is suitable. You see these kids like Brayshaw and Heaney come in and make their debuts. You know what? If they're not quite ready, if they have to play VFL for a year while they're in the AFL system and are being developed, I don't mind that either. I think the age is right.
Okay, put yourself also in team selection. Who's got to come into your side? What changes would you make to your side this week as well? Also, have you got a comment on the AFL draft age? Should it stay or should it change? And also, when we come back, we'll take your calls. Plus, I want to ask you about the two strikes policy. It seems that today in the Herald Sun, seems that the AFL and the players and the AFL Players Association, looks like a couple of strikes policy. Looks like the three strikes policy is going to be changed.
Yep.
Looks like maybe two strikes at the moment could be the favoured policy. Again, I'd take it down to zero tolerance. But we'll get your thoughts as well. We're coming back with the buzz.
And if you stole a car three times, would the AFL say, well, you can steal a car once and you can steal a car twice, but on the third time you steal a car, we're actually going to... I mean, it just doesn't make sense. It's illogical to me that you can promote something that's illegal. That's where I think we have to take the discussion.
Well, it seems to me that all the talk from the coaches and the clubs now, talking tough, and so they should, that they're sick and tired of the three strikes policy. I think it was Stuart Fox of Hawthorn. He wanted to give life after the third strike, which I thought was probably a bit too heavy a penalty. Life, I think, is long time in a football career, but I think you can get a couple of years if you have three strikes. But Paul Roos, he doesn't like the three strikes policy. It's like pinching cars, and of course you get away with it before anyone charges you with anything.
Aruzi's wrong. You can steal about five cars because you can steal a car first up and then say, I put my hand up, I stole a car. No problems. We won't put that on your record. And then after 4 years, the car that you stole, that gets taken off your record. Does that happen in the criminal justice system where you just forget about things 4 years later? And so what I think they should do, you know, it might be two strikes, it might be one strike with a warning for first year players as you've advocated, but they've got to take all those wrinkles out of it. You know, that you know, I think if you have a strike, well, that stays on your record until the rest of your career. I think if you, get suspended, or so rather, there should be the self-reporting situation should be eradicated as well. So make it a very clean system that everyone can understand. That hasn't got wrinkles. That hasn't got. Well, maybe you might have to step out for counselling. That is the point of conjecture, Kevin. Because what we still need to do with this system is if people have addictions, if people have mental health issues that see them taking drugs, maybe to try and escape the worries of the world, that they are also catered to. So it's very hard to have a one-strike policy that also helps out people who have depression or who have serious medical health issue.
You can still help those people, and that doesn't mean that they have to play. They can be 6 weeks on the sideline with the first strike. I mean, a lot of people jumped up and down and said, you shouldn't name anyone because that's going to stop them from, developing and, overcoming problems and all sorts of things. Shouldn't name and shame.
Yep.
Tom Liberatore got found with some tablet on him and therefore by the police, so he gets named straight away and he's got one strike. Well, Tom Liberatore bounced back, wins the best and fairest at the Bulldogs, one of the best players in the competition. So it didn't hurt him.
No, but it might
help. Might have woken him up a fair bit.
But Tom was a brash young kid from the city who had a popular father who strutted around, and maybe it was a reality check for him. But there might be a kid out there who is suicidal and feels like the pressure of the AFL is suffocating and takes GBH, maybe as Travis Tuck did, to try and escape that, and might feel like under that policy, he wants to do something crazy and rash. So all I'm saying is let's have a hardline policy that also has some trigger point, who also has an escape clause, not for the blokes out there who are just taking the piss out of the code, but for the blokes out there who are suicidal and need to be rehabilitated themselves. I think we can do that with the code.
Let's go back to our callers. Nick joins us from Hoppers Crossing. G'day, Nick.
Hey, good morning, KV and Buzz.
G'day.
About the drug policy, I think it should go to zero tolerance. First, one strike and that's it. But like you said, Buzz, there should be a quite a good balance. You look at everything. And for the first year, second year players, you should help them out a little bit after that because they've given videos and everything. That's it. It's like me saying, I'm going to Kevin Dennis today and tomorrow and Friday and borrowing a car and Friday I'm ringing up the police and say, come and arrest me.
What we do need is more tests, and Grant Baker in the Herald Sun tells us that. There's been a lot of speculation around about clenbuterol positive tests, other players that might have been involved, and we've checked those out as journos should. One of the players said, you know what, I sure haven't tested positive because I haven't been tested for performance-enhancing drugs for the last 3 years. Now, that's unacceptable. Every player should be tested for illicit drugs and performance-enhancing drugs at least a couple of times a year. I know there's target testing, which means that some of those tests are taken up by the one bloke you think is in trouble, so you get him six or eight times a season. But if players aren't even being tested for illicit drugs once a year, of course they're going to run the gauntlet. So we've got to be better about that and more transparent about how many times players are tested per year.
Johnny has joined us from Richmond. G'day, John.
Hi, fellas. Just on the unsung hero round, I looked at Neville Jetta. I thought he's had a pretty stellar 2014 season, and he's brought that form into 2015. I thought, yeah, he's been really good, and he's the kind of guy now who's, kept Jack Grimes out of the team. So, yeah, it just shows great work he's been doing over the last probably 16 months.
Well, Jeff Garlett at the other end, you make a great point. Thought Jack Watts. Gee, we smash him whenever he plays a mediocre game. Lin Jong was another one who probably is only getting an opportunity because Daniel Cross has moved on, because Cooney, because Ryan Griffin have moved on. So the old cliche about crisis creating opportunity, sometimes it's true.
No, Jetta was very, very good, John. No doubt about that. And
Super last year. It really
yes,
emerged
he was
again
good last
year.
And again, he's one of those players who went under the radar coming out of round one. Who were the eye catchers that didn't quite catch the eye of mainstream media. Zach is in Roeville. G'day, Zach. G'day, Zach. I can hear Zach in the background there. We'll come back to Zach. Anthony is in Northcote. G'day, Anthony.
Yeah, g'day, Kevin.
G'day.
Yeah, mate, I reckon Carlton's made a huge mistake with Eddie Betts, mate. He played a wonderful game on the weekend against North Melbourne there. he's underrated at Carlton. I think they didn't think he was able to play in the centre.
We're talking off-air about Craig Lambert.
I thought they made a mistake last year with Eddie Betts, let alone this year.
Well, exactly. We're talking off-air about Craig Lambert, and you said that he put a price upon his head, and Brisbane just snapped it up when he thought he was going to North Melbourne. Sometimes you just pay the price. I think in retrospect, Carlton should have paid the price on Eddie Betts. He wanted something like 600 grand. They said, look, we can't afford that. We're going to get Daisy Thomas in on 700 ourselves. So, I think...
Who's a better player, Eddie Betts or Daisy Thomas?
Well, at the moment, Betts is twice the player. Now, I know that Daisy Thomas only lasted 60 seconds. Interesting, too. Now, they've given him 4 to 6 weeks off. Dr. Peter Larkins, who's probably the elite sports medico floating around, he says that all the other clubs would have put Daisy in for surgery. So it'll be interesting to see whether he comes back within that time, whether it is a mistake. He could probably have surgery now and get back in 4 months. But look, is Carlton's season over? Mick Moldas knows he needs to win games. I'm sure he wouldn't jeopardise Daisy's recovery for his own priorities. But according to the man who knows, Doc Larkins, it's an interesting decision.
How many players who do their shoulder actually, rest it? But at some stage down the track, don't have to have it operated on.
No.
Just keeps, popping out.
I think Carlton acknowledges that even if he did get through the season, he would need surgery. Stephen Morris did it for Richmond, I think, in round three last year and played through the year. But I'll give you another question. How many players strap it up and go for it 6 weeks later and have a really good season? I'd say not many. I'd say a lot of those players really battle through the year.
Well, have a look at Gary Ablett on the weekend. Now, he had an operation way, way back.
Nine months ago.
And even on the weekend, he still looked like he was a little bit hesitant and still not quite, full confidence in his shoulder. So how'd you be if you just rest it, knowing it hasn't got pins and screws and plates and all that sort of stuff, and you rest it, and then, they put a bit of tape around it, which is useless, by the way, and they run out. I mean, how would your confidence be?
And you know what, Daisy Thomas? Daisy Thomas has coming for him in 6 weeks exactly what Jack Viney put into Gary Ablett. A huge amount of pressure, bumping him, scragging him, dragging him to the ground. That might have been the worst game that Gary Ablett has ever played. And he kicked those two miracle goals in the fourth quarter. But when has he ever missed that opportunity? The handball, didn't even really go for it in the goal square. And then he handballed to Colin Garland, who said, yep, 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 out the back, handballed it to him, kicked a goal from point blank range. It's almost the worst game Gary Ablett has ever played.
We'll take a break. When we come back, Ralphie's buzzer beater as well, and his buzzy beater, and his predictions, what's going to happen. He's got to look into his crystal ball. Plus, we'll come back and we'll take more of your calls, 9429 1116.
On Hungry for Sports, which magical moment caught your attention over the weekend? Find out if it made Ralphie's buzzer beater.
Ah, yes, the buzzer beater, of course. This is where you make a fantastic prediction, and also you tell us what caught your attention, what beat the buzzer beater on the weekend, which was absolutely spectacular.
Well, there was once a time where Grant Hackett had to win gold medals to achieve victory. Here's Grant Hackett in the glory times.
Grant Hackett, the 20-year-old from the Gold Coast. The crowd on their feet. It's been decided in the pool. 25 metres to swim. A changing of the guard. He's left a legend in his wake. He deserves to win. He hasn't lost since 1997. Grant Hackett headed for gold. Kieran Perkins will get the silver. Hackett in now. Gold to Australia. Grant Hackett wins.
Well, 14 years later, he's older and he's a lot wiser, and he's been batted around the a little bit. But what he did was he won, not by actually coming first in a race, but he qualified for the World Championships. Now, of course, all the social commentators, Kevin, they got into that. They thought, oh, hang on, some clickbait awaits. They started saying, well, all of those sports journalists have exonerated him for the terrible things, let's face it, that he did. He threatened his wife and some real issues there. I think sport can help you rehabilitate yourself. We're not exonerating what he did and upsetting the grand piano and threatening his wife and wandering around Crown Casino and, in a Stilnox-induced haze. Mm. But what we're saying is that he's showing himself to be a good role model again. He's working his butt off to train hard. He's trying to rehabilitate his family situation. We're not forgetting what he did, but it's a part of him. Everyone deserves second chances. If he can actually show to himself that he can inspire the next generation or, some 25-year-olds thinking that they are done, that's a positive thing. Not to forget anything that he has done, but using it as part of the context for his ongoing story.
Are you in the corner of Grant Hackett, 9429 1116, because as Buzz says, some social commentators not forgiving of Grant Hackett, and neither should they. But I think Grant Hackett himself has had a look at himself and thought, you know what, I need some credibility. What am I good at? What am I really, really good at? When is my life really going well? It's when I'm in the pool swimming.
Yep. And as a result, doing what he enjoys.
Doing what I enjoy best of all, and, you know, trying to beat the best in the world. Okay, and what about Ralphie's standby this prediction?
My buzzer beater prediction actually is a couple of weeks down the track. It's Augusta. I think Jordan Spieth wins his first major. He's got $10 million. He's 22, so he's the first one of only six players, I think, to have won twice before 22. And I think that Adam Scott might be the runner-up with a broomstick putter. There you go.
Okay.
I told you that Adam Scott would be back to that broomstick. That was after
he had
that
too.
Horrible short stick. Now, my buzzer beater of the week, I've had this discussion with myself.
Yes.
I've thought about it. Tiger Woods can't make the cut. To play well in Augusta, you need to drive well, you need to putt well, you need to chip well, you need nerves of steel. I don't think he's got any of those things. It's all very well to go back to your mansion and have a few chips and laugh around and play the par three competition with Lindsey Vonn and entertain the crowd.
Got the kids there as well.
I think the reality of Thursday and Friday might just get to him. I'd love to be proved wrong, but it's just impossible, isn't it? It's got to be impossible. You can't take 2 months off and come back and do that. But I'll be watching every second of it.
Well, we'll play the buzzer beater come Monday morning. Zach is in Roeville. G'day, Zach.
G'day, fellas. Selection dilemma for you. Bernie Vince has to come in, but I don't know who to drop.
Since when does Melbourne know? Haven't got a player they can drop, Zach.
Jimmy,
he's a good player, Bernie.
He is. Jimmy Tumbus is going to get the Ollie Wines comparison for a long time because, of course, Melbourne could have selected Ollie Wines ahead of him. But Jimmy's the man. Jimmy was a sub and he came onto the ground and that was all very well. But I just think Jimmy's going to be up and down for a lot till he can find some tricks in his game because right now he hasn't got a lot of tricks.
Broadcasting that Giants and Melbourne game and, of course, got Chris Dawes coming back into the side. Bernie Vince coming back into the side. Could the D's start 2-0?
Well, I listen to a lot of it on radio, so you don't get the full perspective. What's the forward makeup? You know that Jack Watts is going to continue to play forward, as is Jesse Hogan. Howe still plays back. It was the third tall forward there that I suppose Dawes would come in
for. You've got Jack Watts, you've got Dawes, and you've got Jesse Hogan.
Yeah. So you can play three small forwards, three tall forwards. The mix is still okay if Dawes comes in.
Oh, yeah. Bernie Vince has got to come into the side.
Of course he does.
And I think he was second or third in their best and fairest last year, and he's a terrific player. Ben is in Bulleen. G'day, Ben.
Yeah, g'day, guys. Look, just on Paul Roos's dribble, you can't really spike someone's drink with a stolen car. And stealing a car is a little bit different than, you know, doing a line of cocaine. But there's an ex-chief police commissioner who was on the war on drugs. He's actually publicly outspoken on legalising a lot of these drugs. So maybe you should get him on to get a different sort of view because there's a lot of hysteria around this. And I reckon the players should not even take these tests. None of their business is a criminal matter. So maybe you should try and get him on.
We talked about it on Saturday, Kevin. If any player out there wants to take drugs now, illicit drugs, like cocaine or whatever it might be, when they know that these drugs might be laced with clenbuterol, and you might get a four-year ban, you'd be absolutely crazy. You'd have rocks in your head. And yet some of them, I'm sure, over the last couple of weeks, despite what has happened, I'm sure would have taken risks in a nightclub on a Saturday night.
Well, I'm certain, Ben, that's okay as long as you're not playing sport. You can do whatever you want to do if you're not playing sport. But as Ben McDevitt said in his press conference, he said, look, ASADA's not the enemy. We're there to make certain that those who want to play sport drug-free have an opportunity of playing the sport without being cheated by those who are taking performance-enhancing drugs. So, you know, if you're playing sport, that's the idea of having clean sport. So if you're taking illicit drugs, they can be used as marking agents. They can also lead to other drugs as well, and therefore severe drugs that can actually get you rubbed out. Now, you're suggesting to us that, you know, the Collingwood players, if they don't know how they've got this into their system, but if you've taken illicit drugs and it's been spiked by, you know, clenbuterol or something like that, well, then it shows up as a performance-enhancing drug.
It does. Yep. Sport is an absolute privilege to play at the highest level when you're earning, an average of $300,000. And as I say, as long as you have some inbuilt capacity to help those players out with serious mental illnesses or depression, Well, I don't mind if it's zero strikes, as long as there's a trigger for those players.
We'll take a break. We're coming back with The Buzz. And, of course, The Buzz is always brought to you by Eco Garage Doors for all your garage door needs. At Eco, they don't just make insulated garage doors. They have the largest range of garage doors on the Australian market. Now, Eco would also like to welcome all builders and renovators to call for comparison pricing, as they will guarantee, yes, guarantee to beat any price. This is their famous number, 9703-1500. 9703-1500. Johnny joins us in Camberwell. G'day, John.
G'day.
The Buzz is here as well.
Yeah, Buzz. And Kevin. Kevin, I'm very upset at what happened to Bartell on Monday with that tackle. Could you please explain if that is a legal tackle, or if so, the league must stamp it out straight away?
I think Taylor Duray grabbed him in the centre square. He brought him to ground. Unfortunately, it was a horrible tackle that drove him into the ground. Horrible in terms of what happened.
Wasn't a sling tackle.
But I don't think it was a sling tackle. I don't think there were two movements. I think it was just a really bad set of circumstances. I can't see how Bartell can play this week if he's been concussed at least 10 times, if he's had brain scans. I know Geelong will go through the proper procedures. But look, should there be a mandatory week off after concussions? Mm. Certainly after one as terrible as that.
John, obviously the match review panel didn't think it was illegal. Obviously there are times when you get pinned and you can't, you know, protect your fall. And unfortunately in this particular case, you know, Bartell hits his head, John. But most people seem to think it was one of those unfortunate things. But it wasn't a separate...
It wasn't a Shane Mumford
a separate
sling
action
tackle,
where
wasn't
there's
it?
A separate slinging of the player into the ground to actually hit his head. Buzz, you've been magnificent today.
Talk to you tomorrow.
We'll catch you tomorrow.